Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
I'm walking through streets that are dead. Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 119. I'm Dave, the host of the show tonight. Now, you may quickly ask a big question. Where's the main man? Where's Stu? Well, I can tell you and advise you what is only known to me and a few very loyal dieharders out there. Stu has been called away on jury duty. His Avengers business has taken him into the court system, and he will be out for up to potentially 9 weeks or more. He can't say anything about it. He can't be on the show. So we will definitely... I mean, I already miss him. I already miss the big guy. I mean, 30 seconds into the show, I miss the big man. But look, the main man will be back for sure. That will take its own time. In the meantime, look, you'll be a combination of some solo albums, such as tonight. And I've already tapped a few people to come on. You're going to have Adam the Computer. My friend Dion's coming on. Jimmy Terz is going to do Jimmy Jargons and other people as well out there. You know, all the alliances I like to broker, you know how it is. I mean, everything's negotiable. Everything's negotiable with me. It's all on the table. No, but seriously, so next show, we will have an episode with my friend Dion. We're going to come on, and so that'll be a lot of fun as well. Have him live in the studio in my office, you know, getting comfortable. And who knows, you know, and Stu, meanwhile, you know, just out of the he's part of the system at the moment. We can't talk to him. He can't make any comments, you know, so let the big man go. Now, okay, so turning to the show tonight, I want to point people to know that I've got a few radical ideas. These 9 weeks, I'm going to do a bit of format changing. Nothing really from the main show will change. We'll still have the basic show that you're getting tonight. I'll probably do a little, few little sort of one-shot specials and stuff like that. Break it up a little bit more with, because this will be a shorter show. It's always shorter when you go solo. Because simply there's not another voice there to sort of argue with your points and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We all know what Stu's like. Yeah, so there'll be a few little things, but I mean, think of them as they'll be sort of little entree dishes. The main show will be here and with sort of either solo and some rotating hosts. Now, first off, how am I? It's bitterly cold in Sydney tonight. Let me tell you that much. Like, I was walking along in my big jacket, rugged up, just thinking about the show, thinking I was like, this is like John Lennon cutting loose, first album kind of style, like Plastic Ono Band. I don't believe in Beatles, if you recall, he said. He blew down all the 60s icons and ended with that. Just Yoko and me, and that's reality. Wow, it was heavy, man, when that fucking line dropped in my head. I was like, wow, he doesn't believe in Beatles? Jesus Christ, what the fuck? But hey, that was just a phase the man was going through. He just had enough. He wanted to forge solo. Wow. Well, I'm in the jumpsuit, you know that. And, you know, maybe not as intense as old John Lennon back in 1970, whatever, but maybe just about as intense. So what have I been doing? Well, thank you for asking. First up, I'm going to make a comment. Titans, I said on the show last week, I think, that I wanted us to do a show review of the whole season, and Stu, to quote Stu, said, that sounds like a lot of work. And it wasn't that hard for me because I'd already watched about 2/3 of it, so that was why I suggested it. I polished off the rest of Titans over the course of the week. I've been ill, actually, so probably, as someone said at work, your voice is sounding extra nasally today. And I was like, thanks. And they went, yeah, it's always nasally, but it's got an extra pitch to it, and because I've been sick. I'm coming off a cold. I'm sort of like 80% recovered, still got a slight cough, which might come in and out during the show, but my voice, I understand, will be more nasal than normal. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's always been nasal, so it can't affect people that much. Okay, so Titans. Here's my review. it's as good and faithful a superhero TV show adapting a work that as I've seen. I really actually dug it. And I'm not like a card-carrying Teen Titans fan member, but I like Dick Grayson and Nightwing a lot, and I've read enough Teen Titans, especially Geoff Johns' Teen Titans, to know the basic beats of the group fairly well. I think it's an excellent show. I've watched all 11 episodes. I'd watched about 5 of them a while ago, and then when I was sick, I watched like about 4 in one day. It's really good. Doom Patrol is probably a better show, conceptually, and some of the angles, but if you're just looking for a good superhero show it's just a touch darker than like CW. It's not that different to the CW shows. But I really enjoyed it. The guy who plays Dick Grayson does a good job. The cast is good. Starfire took some getting used to, but I was okay with it. She's fairly consistent. She's a good actress playing the role. I always find the weakest part of Teen Titans for me is the Raven stuff, and it's okay here. Beast Boy's, quite funny. And Hawk and Dove, who I do not care about at all. Like, as in, just couldn't care less about Hawk and Dove normally. It actually done very well in the show. It's one of the most entertaining subplots, actually. And just as an adaptation of a property, I think it's as good as anything I've seen in terms of how loyal it is. It's very loyal. You get the basic beats of the comic and the Titans done well in the show, like very well. It's better than the CW shows by some stretch, I think, personally. I was very impressed by that show. So that's a recommendation. Now, I just want to do a shout-out to Ray. Ray's going through some tough times at the moment. No need to get into them exactly here, but Ray, I want you to know, consider your brother in arms, my friend, and a king seated beside me as we rule the world. And Inner Demon said they're the court jester. Well, I mean, hey, as far as I was concerned, they were kings as well, but if they want to be the jester clowning around, well, making me laugh, why not? I always think the jesters are pretty cool, frankly. And he could come in like a sort of Ghost Rider mask and do some crazy stuff. This is because of Teen Titans. I suddenly was like, man, because a lot of it relates to Dick Grayson's cutting loose from Batman. He's been kind of loose from a couple of years and, they sort of bring up those issues. Now, I went back and thought, I want to look at the key comics when Dick Grayson actually left Batman. And it's in Batman 217. It's his departure to Hudson University. It's quite abrupt. It's tied into Batman abandoning the Batcave and Wayne Manor to go and live in the city in like an apartment kind of style complex. And frankly, it's a bit of not a great issue. Like, considering the dramatic nature of those two events, it's a kind of underplayed. He just basically gets up and leaves and says he's going to university. That's it. But, you see emotion, but it's kind of stilted. Batman 408, which came out right after year one, so in the 80s, gave us some more context in the form of a retconned flashback of Dick Grayson being told to leave by Batman after Joker shoots him in the shoulder. Again, not the greatest issue in the world, but it does depict why Dick Grayson left, basically because he was told to. And he said, well, I don't know, he just kind of left after he got shot in the shoulder. It's not particularly told very well. Like, if I have to be honest, it sort of feels like someone told them to write it and so they wrote it, but in a very sort of predictable style. I don't know, it just wasn't given that. I don't know, it was kind of all plot, no character, but not a good plot even. So that wasn't a great episode. Neither of them are great issues, actually, but they do depict the events, which is why I went back and checked. Okay, this is funny. So Stu, as he often points out, I'm a big Lobo fan. We know Stu isn't, but I am a big Lobo fan. And the 90s Lobo is what I'm talking about. And in Krypton Season 2, Episode 1, the hype was that Lobo was going to be in it. Now, that was enough for me. I've watched a couple of episodes of Krypton. I watched like the first 2 or 3 and thought it was okay. But I'm not a really hardcore Superman guy. And I know, I actually thought it was okay, though. Like, I almost kept watching. But Lobo was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. So I got the show. And this show's been coming up a week. I've been really busy and I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch this damn show because I was finishing watching Titans and stuff. This morning, knowing I had to go to work and then come back here and record, I woke up, it was around 5:30 a.m. and I'd gone to bed early because I've been sick. And so I woke up and I was pretty alert and I just thought to myself, you might as well just watch the show now. And, got up, put on Krypton Season 2, Episode 1, like at 5:30 a.m. in the morning with a little blankie and a little cup of tea, and was just like only watching for Lobo. That's the only way. But like I was sort of like, oh, I'll watch the show, see what it's like as well. It's very middling. It's not terrible. It's not great. It occupies that kind of like mediocre to just about average sci-fi show that I know some people would love, and I know that some really big Superman fans probably dig this show, but for me, it wasn't great. And it was a long 40 fucking 2 minutes. And then finally, at the end of the show, when I realized it was going to happen as the show was wearing on, I was like, Lobo ain't coming early. He's right at the end, and I thought he was too small. I thought his accent sounded stupid. And this was not a win. And this comes from a card-carrying member of the Lobo fan club. I don't know why DC Warners didn't make him a bigger guy, like more muscly guy. Like, he's just not muscly enough. Like, I mean, Lobo's stacked. And in my imagination, someone like The Rock is perfect for Lobo. I would, if The Rock was playing Lobo, I would think that's some of the best casting out there. But forget The Rock for a second. Even just a bigger actor, like just a bigger guy, like ex-wrestler kind of thing. Like, and the voice I didn't love. Now, there is a Lobo TV show coming. Yes, I'm a big enough fan that I'll check it out. But if it's not any better, I don't know. And it's such a shame because Lobo was a bounty hunter. There's so many stories. Like, Alan Grant in the 90s did a fucking fantastic job on Lobo. And honestly, it just made me want to go and read the Lobo comics, which is probably not a bad thing either. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with the character. Apparently, it's being seeded through this season a fair bit. And then there's going to be a Lobo TV show. I haven't checked online to see what the reaction is to Lobo. Oh, you know what? We're on this show. Let's have a look. Let's go live. Lobo TV Krypton. What is the chances that there's going to be some sort of uproar or something like that from people? This Lobo spin-off TV show in the works. Yada, yada, yada. Like, so it's it isn't spinning off like you would think. Like, there's no sort of... I'll research this. I'll come back. I'll come back next episode. And probably one of these one-shots that I'm going to do, because I'm going to do another one-shot during the week, and I'll discuss what the reaction was to Lobo. I'll research it a bit more. Yeah, look, I don't want it to make it sound like it was the worst TV show ever, but at 5:30 in the morning, it's more than a pass. It's like a 5.5 out of 10. Lobo, to me, was, 5 out of 10, maybe? Like, just passable. I didn't like the accent and thought the... some of the facial mannerisms were good. That was one of the best parts of it. But I just felt he wasn't big enough. And that's a common complaint amongst modern Lobo fans because they redid him in New 52 terribly. And it was down to editorial. I'm not taking shots at the writer. It was an editorial creative decision. I don't know why you changed Lobo. Like, from... I mean, he's just so fucking classic. Like, why change it? Like, either don't use him or play the classics, for Christ's sake. No one wants to hear the fucking cover song. You know, like, we want to hear the classic fucking song. Anyway, Avengers Endgame was re-released with new footage. And I love all these guys on the fucking internet and who are so obsessed with it beating Avatar. Like, at a certain point, I just don't care. Like, honestly, it's a curiosity, nothing more. Like, I'm not... Like, both properties are owned by Disney. I'm not making any money out of the deal. I've seen Avatar twice in cinemas, and I saw Endgame once. I think Endgame's by far the better movie. Like, I don't need this validation that they seem to be craving. So with the re-release of new footage, that is interesting. I wonder what new footage that will be. I don't know what's been disclosed yet. I guess I'm interested in seeing the new footage. I'm not rushing down to the cinema to see it. I mean, I felt the remake or the PG version of Deadpool 2 was a very cynical move. Very cynical move. And I find this is just as cynical. And, you know, the accountants can pat themselves on the back, though, because they're doing what George Lucas did in the 90s when he re-released the Star Wars trilogy, original saga, with the new alterations. And I went and saw all of them in the cinemas. So, but they're doing it, like, a month after the original came out. I'm not going to pretend like I think it's the greatest thing of all time that they're doing this. I really don't. And I'm not also not going to pretend that like it could beating Avatar is like the summation of all my life's dreams. Like, okay, cool. It beats Avatar. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Like, you know, whoop-de-doo. Like, honestly, sometimes some of the stuff that gets reported in news, I wonder if anyone outside investors really should care. Because, you know what I mean? Like, if you're an investor, yeah, I mean, this is a fucking meal ticket. It's great. But outside of that, like, what difference does it make to my life, really? Okay. Anyway, turn into something that's actually fucking interesting. Greg Rucker was on Word Balloon. Now, I think everyone who's ever listened to Signal knows that I'm a big Greg Rucker fan. And John Suntress on Word Balloon always gives a good interview with whoever he's got on. But his interview with Greg Rucker, he calls them the Rucker debriefs, are always very entertaining and informative more than anything else, because Greg Rucker is one of these guys who's always got a lot on. I just want to do a summation of stuff here. Obviously, you can go listen to Word Balloon, but hey, Signal Doom's giving you the condensed version. The Old Guard, the Rucker miniseries, is coming to Netflix as a movie. Now, we actually did an issue of The Old Guard on the show. I remember it. It was basically like soldiers who are immortal and can't be killed from memory, and they've been around for ages. So that's coming to Netflix as a movie, so I think that's interesting. Now, really interesting to me, Stumptown, which is a female PI comic series that Rucker does that I absolutely love, love it, is coming to ABC as a show very shortly. And he talks a lot about that. And, yeah, it just really honestly, I had it all digitally, and I read it pretty much as it. I may have missed the first one and then hopped on board when I heard him talking about Stumptown. I went back and got it all. It's great. He loves the Rockford Files, and this is kind of like a female PI, not a million miles away from a female James Rockford, like not, you know, not a million miles, put it that way. Really good comic series, and I'm very interested to see what the TV show is like. So he talks a lot about that, and I, as I said, I've just ordered the 4 hardcovers of the series. I think they're up to 4 now, I think, and I think there's a 5th one coming. Also, he spoke about the Lois Lane Maxi series, a 12-issue series that he's doing with DC, that's launching, under that Black Label stuff, I believe. I'm not sure if it's even called Black Label anymore. They may have changed that with the recent, issues they've had. But regardless, he's doing a Lois Lane series. Now, everybody on the Signal should know that I consider Lois my icon and my, you know, like, I am Lois, really. Let's face it, as I break down these stories. And I'll be reading that with open eyes and just open mind. I absolutely love it when Greg Rucker gets involved on these kind of properties. He never really lets me down, ever, I must say. As a writer, he just, something about the way he tells a story, it just hooks me. It's quite uncanny, actually. Now, moving away from that news, Ridley Scott is making a Gladiator sequel. I tell you what, Michelle and I are watching at the moment on the TV. We're watching this series of Rome. It's documentary, but sort of, I don't know, acted documentary. I don't know. I don't know what you call that, actually. Like, it's a history series with actors playing it. And with, I think, a fair bit of narration. We've only watched about 3 episodes, but it's very interesting. And Marcus Aurelius is, and his son, who is the emperor in Gladiator, is one of the first stories they tell. And we're going to keep watching. And I think Michelle's starting to wean off it a bit, but I'm obsessed by Roman Empire. I love the Roman Empire. May the sun never set. And then my sister always says it did, Dave. And I'm just like, well, God damn it. Anyway, he's making a Gladiator sequel. I feel it's completely unnecessary. Why not do another story about Rome and not call it Gladiator 2? Because I assume that Russell Crowe can't come back from the dead. But this is Hollywood, I guess. They want to make sure everyone knows it's Gladiator 2, not just another period piece. Ridley Scott, he's had a few misses recently, but then again, he's still Ridley Scott. I'll watch it for sure. I hope it's good. I'm definitely up for a Roman epic, so, you know, more power to him, I guess. I'd like more of a movie about the Empire and, like, fighting off the hordes and stuff like that and getting more into the war kind of side of things than anything else, like, from sort of an imperial level. Like, it could also be a TV show. I guess I'm watching a TV show like that on Netflix now, but I don't know. I'd also like someone to do a thing on the Crusades. I've been listening to an audiobook about the Crusades, and man, it's interesting. If someone could do a thing about Richard Lionheart and Saladin, I'd queue up for that. They should do that as well. There's so much fertile ground there, like from both sides of that conflict, that you could just mine. There'd be movies in it, or like a long TV series in it. I haven't seen a TV series about the Crusades in recent years, and I think that would be something that'd be really interesting. Someone might think it's a political hot potato, but I think it'd just be fucking fascinating. Look, this is interesting. The Cyclops actor, Ty Sheridan, says the villains in Dark Phoenix were originally Skrulls. Well, that would have been more interesting than the basically unnamed villains that we got served with. Jesus Christ. Like, I guess like Skrulls, they can change face, but honestly, like, that was just so poor how bad those villains were and how underutilized they were and how little of a backstory they had. It was just terrible. So, yeah, it would have been better if they were Skrulls. I agree with the actor Ty Sheridan, who I've never heard of before in my life and was completely vanilla in the movie. Macaulay Culkin. Did he say his name? Or Culkin. Rumored to be playing the Joker in the Matt Reeves Robert Pattinson Batman movie. I've been thinking about this during the week, and I don't hate it as much as you might think. Macaulay Culkin is a weird-looking guy. I've seen him recently, and at one point he had no weight. He looked skeletal. He looked like he had a healthy drug habit, or should I say an unhealthy one. He's actually cleaned his act up, got a bit of definition back, and looks a lot sort of more employable. I don't know what his acting's like. I liked him as a kid. I thought he was entertaining in the Home Alone movies and My Girl. And like, he was an entertaining, charming actor in his day. I don't know. I mean, he's a loose cannon now. You know, he's kind of like a needle in the arm kind of style actor. And you could get something quite cool out of that, I guess. It's like a train wreck, really, his life, isn't it? Like, from what I've seen from the outside. Anyway, I'd be careful in hiring that kind of guy for Joker, though, because, you know, that's a big role, really. The Matt Reeves movie, Batman, with Robert Pattinson, who I'm on the fence about. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, he's this really great actor, and wow, you should just see him outside of Twilight. I've not seen him in a fucking movie outside of Twilight. Jesus Christ, like, has he been in anything anyone knows? Like, that's not watching the indie art house scene, for Christ's sake? Like, is it possible he could be in a movie that actually people watch? Anyway, that's my thoughts on that. I'm not fucking too thrilled with the casting so far that Matt Reeves has been doing. Like, I was really pumped up for Matt Reeves, and Robin Pattinson has got me shaking my head, raising my eyebrows a little bit. Macaulay Culkin feels like another fucking very loose choice. I don't know, maybe get some real actors. Got some guys who have got some runs on the board, like, would be good. Audrey Plaza, or Aubrey Plaza, who I know from, is she in Parks and Rec? I honestly know her well from something. Yeah, she is in Parks and Rec, but she's in a lot of other things as well since then, I think. But anyway, I don't really understand this. Licks Stephen Colbert in a Catwoman audition for the Batman. Well, she wants to play Catwoman. And frankly, I don't mind her at all. I think she's quite a charming actress, frankly. I think she's got a lot of personality. I don't mind that casting choice at all. It sounds like, I don't know what licking Stephen Colbert's got to do with anything. I'm not a fan of Colbert or the Colbert Report, and like, oh my God, like, someone should have said to him, mate, the politics is, it's really getting tiresome now. Really, it is. Like, it's, we've gone past funny. We're now into just boring. I'm not a fan of Stephen Colbert. Just his style, I find, and shit, frankly. And why she's licking him to get the role is a mystery that is known to whoever wrote this headline, because I have no idea. The reinvention of Men in Black is struggling to recoup its budget. Well, Stu was laying some bombs on this last show. I must admit, it feels like it hasn't connected, you know? It just feels like there's been a disconnect between the audience and the filmmakers. Excuse me while I have a drink of water, because with this throat, wowee, Sinatra mid-60s with a cold. Okay, how about this? This recent resonance? How do you say that word? I'm not sure. Okay, Keanu Reeves is interested in Marvel, and Marvel is interested in Keanu Reeves. We very much want to figure out the right way to do it. Yes. Yes is my answer. I love Keanu Reeves. I've liked him since the 90s, basically. Like, even almost the 80s. Like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I remember seeing it in school. I think an English teacher put it on, actually, when they pulled out the old videotape because they had no class or something. There was some reason, who knows what. And they played Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and I honestly thought it was the funniest thing I had seen in years. And then we watched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which I think was fantastic. Now there's a new Bill and Ted movie coming. Keanu's got John Wick. He's blowing up all over the place. I'm so happy that Keanu Reeves, who never really has been too far away. I mean, he had Matrix and he had the John Wick movies, but people just seem to have woken up to the fact that Keanu Reeves is just a really cool, chilled guy, who's kept some level of sort of sanity and humility enough that he's impressed people with it. I think he's just a cool guy. I've always liked him. And I'm thrilled that, basically audiences are responding in this crazy fashion, which I've always had a lot of respect for Keanu Reeves. So for me, it's another day at the fucking office. But good for him. And yeah, definitely get him in Marvel. There's so many characters now that they've opened up X-Men and Fantastic Four, not to mention Avengers characters, that you could fit Keanu in. I don't care. I mean, people were saying Reed. I think, what about Arcade or someone like that? Like, Give him a role with some sort of flash. Don't make it too serious. Keanu's a funny actor. He's probably less mannered than he was. I think Keanu's not too bad at all, and he'll have that real chilled performance that he gives to everything. I'm definitely hoping they do cast him in something. I'm just happy for him to have such continued success. Anthony Carrigan is the villain in Bill and Ted. Well, good luck if you know who that is, because I certainly don't. I mean, again, this is a solo show. I'm going to do, like, the research that I know Stu would say we have to do. Like, Anthony Carrigan, and I'm not going to do too much work. Like, he's bald, okay? That's what we've got so far. Barry, I mean, honestly, has anyone ever heard of these things? Like, some show called Barry he stars in. So, okay, well, Anthony, he's bald as a badger. He doesn't just play bald, he is bald. Okay, well, wow, he looks like Death. I wonder if he's playing Death. He could be playing the Reaper, because the Reaper was in Bill and Ted, and I don't know. Or maybe one of Death's servants or something. But anyway, he looks like Death warmed up, so it looks like he could be playing some role of that, genre. It's like, I love it when you see people report a name that means nothing. Like, it's not a name on everyone's lips. Anyway, Michael Keaton's Batman debuted 30 years ago this week. Now, honestly, this is something I want to talk about, because it's hard to believe it's 30 years, because I remember Batman 89 sort of like it was yesterday in terms of its impact. The impact of that movie was as big as Avengers Endgame to people at the time. It was a movie that resonated and shook through communities, really, and groups of people. Comic fans like me, at the time I was in comics, but I wasn't heavy. I was kind of medium level. It shook my world. I'd always thought Batman was cool, but this shook me to the core. And the Joker with Jack Nicholson's performance, and also there was a massive amount of hype for the movie. It was one of the first movies that I can remember, and I'm sure there were other movies like Star Wars before it, but it was, I watched all the trailers for it and knew everything about it, and just wanted this movie so badly before I went and saw it. I still remember seeing it in Hobart with a friend of mine at the time. And it was just like 10 out of 10, the whole thing. I loved it. And I saw it. I've watched that movie probably almost as much as any superhero movie. Wolverine Origins I've watched probably 7 times in cinemas and, you know, say 5 times solo. But I've watched Batman probably 20 times over the years. I love it. I think it's a fantastic movie anchored by awesome performances from Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, who just defined the role, like Jerry Hall playing the daughter, Jack Palance as the crime boss. I mean, it's just packed wall-to-wall with good performances, and it's got that kooky vibe. Yeah, it's such a good movie. I watched it again not that long ago, and it still holds up. It's a good film. And at the time, it made Joker seem so fucking cool. Like, I wasn't heavy into DC Comics before that movie. Like, I knew about them and read some of them and certainly read some Batman. But that movie made everyone wake up and realize how great the Joker was. And they used that in the comics a lot. They overexposed him at the time and then had to pull back on it because it was just like people were worshipping the Joker, like, to a level that was almost scary. Like, people love Batman, but the Joker stole that movie in a lot of ways. Like, it's an interesting performance by Jack Nicholson. Look, Heath Ledger did a fantastic performance, but I think of them as two wildly different takes on the same character that were both just incredibly successful. Both of them deserved their Oscars, basically, for sure. Like, anyway, it's crazy to think it's 30 years ago, because I remember being in the newsagent at the time, not even a comic store, and the Joker, or running a Joker story in the comics, it might have been the death of Jason Todd, but don't quote me on that, but it was something along those lines. And I was reading the issues in the comics and just really, you know, in the store, because I didn't have much cash, and I was just like, this is fucking great. Anyway, I think it might have been the night of Lonely Place of Dying, so the follow-up to the Joker's death. To Jason Todd's death, like sort of where Batman was like almost alcoholic at one point, I think, and crippled with grief. Anyway, enough of that. But yeah, look, honestly, if you've got kids, you know, 12 plus range, show them the original Batman movie because it really does hold up. It's a good movie. DC's Legion of Superheroes is no longer from the 31st century. They're now from the 32nd. I mean, honestly, who gives a shit? Like, that's my review. I know Adam the Computer might have some thoughts on it. For me, it's just more of the same. It's just like they've updated it because we were into a new, you know, switching over to the 2000s, I guess. They've got to just stay always, you know, X many fucking years ahead. Otherwise, what's going to happen? Like, you know, it's just like, what's going to happen and who cares what happens? Fans disappointed to learn Marvel did this graphic of webs making the number 4, and it was just a teaser, and people were thinking that it was a teaser for a 4th Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, which is very optimistic from Tobey Maguire fans, I have to say. So give them credit for their optimism. I thought as soon as I saw it, it was pointing to a Spider-Man Fantastic Four team up, because slots on Fantastic Four. He obviously wrote Spider-Man for fucking ever. So the odds of him putting in a team-up between the two seemed reasonably high. But then the joke was on me because it became a 3. And then it's like, okay, well, now we're just doing a countdown, which didn't start at 5, which would have made more sense. But anyway. And, you know, then pundits were speculating. I basically stayed out of the conversation completely. Because at a certain point, I'm like, let's just count down and see what happens now. I'm not going to sit on the internet guessing. You know, it's not worth my time. And it was revealed that J.J. Abrams and Henry Abrahams, his son, are writing a Spider-Man miniseries. C.B. Sabowski was correct. We never saw this one coming. I'm stealing the quote from another site. Well, no, we didn't see this coming, actually, C.B. J.J. Abrams and the son. Oh, here we go. Again, nepotism, again, rears its ugly head. Why can't I be the son of JJ or the son of fucking Larry Kasdan? Like, because I would bring a lot to the fucking table. But look, feel happy that Henry Abrahams, who's never done anything that anyone's ever heard of other than be JJ's son, is getting to write a Spider-Man miniseries. Good luck to both of them, actually, I say, and we will check it out on the Signal for sure. Hey, you can't help, you know, who you're the son of. Like, if you happen to be the son of Spielberg or fucking Abrams or something like that, well, good luck to you. And why pretend that you're going to forge this career of similar success? Why not just milk it? Like, that, you know, seriously, just milk it. Like, okay, I like Spider-Man. You know, I can write some scripts. Like, why not? Let's toss it together. Let's put it out there. Let's throw the JJ name on it. You know, and, like, let's just make lots of money. Yeah, this is interesting, actually, because also Eric Larson, Jerry Conway, and Mark Bagley are returning for a Spider-Man one-shot. So there was speculation that was the build-up, but I think the JJ one was the actual build-up. But still, Eric Larson, Jerry Conway, and Bagley returning for a Spider-Man one-shot, I'll read that in a fucking heartbeat. That sounds really interesting. I've got that big Eric Larson, David Michelinie omnibus, and I seriously haven't really dove into it, but I think I will. I'm putting a lot more structure in my life and having time to read these kind of things and stuff, and it's really enjoyable a lot of the time. I like reading a lot of Spider-Man from those days. David Michelinie was very, very good on Spider-Man. Very, very readable, very dependable. I put him only slightly below Roger Stern, and that's no insult because I consider Roger Stern Spider-Man run the preeminent run. The Michelinie knew what he was doing. Then we had this. This is interesting. I don't know if anyone out there ever, when they were a kid, the banana split show. Na, 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 na. One banana, two banana, three banana, four. It was a banana split show. It was a crazy fucking little show that would come on, at least in my house, right at the tail end of Saturday morning cartoons, kind of when you were supposed to be up and about and active, and only the real hangers-on like me copped them because they were a bit cheap and a bit sleazy and a bit crazy. But I enjoyed them for what they were, which was weird, whatever they were. They were running like go-karts around, these uniforms dressed as dogs. It was always a bit, they were a bit nuts, basically. And there's now a trailer for this new movie that's a horror movie starring them, where they're kind of like just demented killing machines. And I mean, I'm sure someone out there is saying my childhood's being stolen and robbed. But from memory, and it's a vague memory, they were always pretty nuts. It wasn't a kind of stable show. It was kind of a real throw-together kind of show. I'm down for it just because I like the banana splits. So any chance to hear that song coming on again, I was enjoying it. But I thought it looked like a clever satirical kind of horror take. Like, I'm sure it's not going to, you know, break box office records. But it's going to be on Netflix, I believe, as well. So I'll watch it for sure. Also coming from DC, a Black Label Harleen title reimagines Harley Quinn's origin from writer and artist Stefan Sejic, I think you say his name. He's a very respected artist and creator who's done some really good work. I've definitely heard a lot of people speak very highly of this guy. And I think Harley is ready for a retake of her origin. In fact, I feel that her title in general could benefit from a fresh approach. I think Sam Humphries on the title has been, I review them all for Batman Universe. I think he's been lackluster at worst and average at best. I think reimagining the character and giving it this Black Label take could work really well. I think she's a very interesting character that's not currently being mined very well by Sam Humphries, who's determined to go down a cosmic route that I just do not understand. Coming off Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, who were so strong on the title as well and left such a stamp and a mark, I think it's a hard act to follow at the moment. I thought Frank Terry did a very good job, primarily just sort of playing from their beats, adding some stuff of his own. It worked very well. But Sam Humphries, it feels like a lost man on the title to me. And I certainly, I mean, I'll review it for Batman Universe anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I'm down for it. Now, I don't know when it's coming. Sorry about that. I mean, we could research it, but it's not really going to... Like, research it yourselves, guys. Like, if I say November, are you going to be happy? It could be... Sorry, I shouldn't say November because I have no idea. You know what? Again, we're going to do this. This is something that Stu... I like Stu will do this for me because he's on the internet while I'm talking. Harleen, release date. If the internet makes it easy, I will do it. But I'm not going to do it if the internet's making me fucking work really hard. Okay, September 25. Is everyone happy now? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin. why not? I mean, can I just say, working with Jim Morrison must have been an absolute just pressure cooker of a day. You know, like, you hear hardworking professionals, like, you know, recording songs. This guy seemed to be as loose as a goose, constantly on acid or alcohol or some mixture of the two. And he's saying crazy shit like that. Is everybody in? Yeah, we're here. We've paid for our tickets, Jim, because we're here. The ceremony's about to begin. And it's just like, okay. Can we do LA Woman now? Is that possible? Creative genius. Flawed genius, I would say. And maybe a genius as well. Like, just a great showman, though, of rock and roll. Okay, now I want to get into just doing some sort of like, you know, stuff on my own here because Stu's away for the nine, he's at least nine. I want to sort of talk about some of the ideas I've got. As I said, next week there'll be a show with my mate Dion coming on, and there'll be solo shows coming forward, and there's going to be some mixture of guests. But one thing I want to do, because I'm going to do some one-shot shows during a week, like that might just go for like 30 minutes, like little installments. And I want to do a show, for example, on Just Kill and Be Killed and do the whole series and really deconstruct it more than I would normally deconstruct a show. So sort of like, or deconstruct a title. So really get into the nitty gritty of it and, you know, and see what we can find there, what truths we can find by pointing a microscope to the material. And let's see if that can be interesting as well. But regardless, I've always wanted to. We did Kill or Be Killed Volume 1 on the show, and I've not finished reading it, but I've got all of it. So I thought we might do that. It's a fairly, you know, it's a limited run. I don't think it goes beyond about 12 or 15 issues. Also, I want to do something on Rucker's Wolverine run, Greg Rucker's Wolverine run, and also Jason Aaron's Wolverine run. And I think the Jason Aaron one might be possible. I also want to do something on Jason Aaron's Punisher. Sort of stuff that I could do very enclosed, like that I think would be interesting and we could probably get some insights from. And certainly I would highly encourage listeners out there to, you know, write in with your thoughts on those titles, because I'll heavily read them out to be part of the conversation. Yeah, so just stuff like that. Just you know, sort of more like, because, like, you know, I feel like I've been tapping on Watergate recently. Ever since I started the journalism stuff, you know, those questions I was firing off on Twitter, I feel like I'm getting to the heart of something, man. You know, and that could be very fucking interesting. Imagine if I broke a story wide open. That would be cool. Weekly comics. Okay, well, because Stu wasn't here and I knew that, like, that tends to leave, you know, a shorter show, although more of me, I thought I'd do a few more comics than normal. So Superman Year One, Issue One, Frank Miller on writing duties, John Romita Jr., who we do love, on art. Wow. Whoa. This was a slog. This was a fucking slog of a read. Jesus Christ, like, why the fuck is this 64 pages? Jesus, I didn't know that when I wrote this down for Weekly Comics. Man, it's not terrible. I'm giving it a 6 out of 10. It's very predictable. It's very one note. And the art's good. John Romita Jr. is very good on art here. And I like Frank Miller in general, but this just isn't the kind of Frank Miller that I like. Nothing to get too offended by. I think there was some controversy on the internet about it. I don't know why. I mean, I think he might have had sex. Maybe not sex, but... made out heavily with Lana Lang on the day he was leaving to go to military school. I think some people were giving their knickers in a twist about that. I assume, because I didn't see anything else that was particularly, controversial about it. It was just boring. And, yeah, just look, have you seen Superman the movie? Well, you know how they tell the story of Clark Kent in about 10 minutes? Yes, it's the same kind of story they tell here, except they take 64 pages in a 5-issue series. Like, why? We don't know. Yeah, it wasn't super compelling. It also wasn't super bad. It was just super sort of in the fucking middle. And it was a slog at 64, let me tell you. Like, and the art helps, because John Romita Jr. is good on art duties here. Frank Miller, I've got a lot of time for. Frank Miller, I consider you a legend of the fucking game. You're the reason I'm fucking reading, you know, comics. So I'm not going to talk too much shit about Frank Miller, other than to say I felt that the actual issue for me was a bit long and slow. But, you know, for the completists out there, the Miller completists, it's certainly not bad. And I'm not the biggest Superman guy, I'll be honest. And Frank Miller has to take some of the blame for that, because I read Dark Knight Returns and it turned me on to Batman. So, look, some people out there might enjoy it a lot more than me, because they're probably bigger Superman fans, and it is quite a traditional Superman tale. One of the interesting things in it is that Clark is very prescient. Like, he's very clever, sort of thing. Like, he's very aware of his situation and of his place amongst humans and above them, which is an interesting take. Probably not the take I even think of a Superman, who's usually seen as man of the people. But it is interesting. That's probably the most interesting thing about this comic, because the rest of it's very predictable. And it frankly felt unnecessary. Like, do we need Superman Year One if Superman Year One's going to be so similar to what we already know? Probably not. Usagi Yojimbo, I want to talk about this comic. Issue one. This is a great comic. An anthropomorphic rabbit called Usagi Yojimbo is a samurai, basically in Japan, but like all the animals, it's anthropomorphic. So people take on animal shapes and stuff. There's also, I think, humans in it as well, but generally people are like rodents or whatever, you know, all sorts of different creatures. Look, this is a really great comic by Stan Sakai. It's gone for many years and been a dark horse for decades. And I got into it through the guys at Paper Keg, and just, I read a lot of Usagi Yojimbo and I loved it. And so it's now been brought over to IDW, and it's quite a big win for IDW. And yeah, and this is the color version. It's like just coming into a warm bath. It's really good, really familiar, has comedy, has a lot of heart, has intelligence, has humor, has sadness. It's a lot more than what you think a comic about a samurai rabbit would be. It's a really good, really good read, a really good series. It's probably in my top, I started talking to Jim at King's Comics, it's probably in my top 10 comics of all time, the Usagi Yojimbo run by Stan Sakai. And I only came into it a lot later, and I love it. I think it's charming as hell. This issue is no different. There's a Turtles team up coming. They famously, there's a bit of linkage between the Turtles and Usagi Yojimbo. I believe they were friends, the creators, and they've played each other's sandboxes from time to time. IDW also published a Turtle, so it really opens them up to having more crossovers. Yeah, look, I gave this 8 out of 10. It's always a pleasure to read Usagi Yojimbo, and my heart goes out to Stan Sakai, who I think is an incredible artist and writer, and just in general, just a comic book genius. I love him. Now, then we had Red Sonja, Birth of a She-Devil, kind of the origin story of Red Sonja. And as everyone knows, I'm a big fan of Conan and Red Sonja. I think this was a really good issue. I gave it 7.5. Fantastic art. Look, she is female Conan, but she succeeds as being a female Conan. Like, there's enough difference there and enough similarity to make it really interesting. And I really kind of do wish that both of them were owned by Marvel, because I think we could really kind of explore it more. Whereas her being, but even still being owned by Dynamite have put out a lot of good Red Sonja product. I went through a phase where I was reading more Red Sonja than Conan. I think she's a great character. I think people see her costume and just think that she's just nothing but a TNA appeal, but it's really not the message you get from Red Sonja. Like, it really isn't. Visually, yeah, she's very striking, but there's a kind of purity to the character that I really enjoy, and I think a lot of people have done good runs on her, both male and female. And reading a origin issue like this kind of thing, or early days issue, was very enjoyable. There were some small complaints in that I felt like you had to have read other Red Sonja comics to really understand what she was doing, but hey, you know, a lot of those people have read those comics, so that's they're getting rewarded for that. I understand that. Let me tell you, the voice takes its toll when you're doing solo, when you're flying fucking solo, no main man to help out, to assist, to, you know, grab the assist, grab a couple of points. Okay, Superman, Leviathan Rising Special. This came out a few weeks ago, but after hearing Greg Rucker on Word Balloon, I wanted to investigate for myself. really interesting. For much of the comic, it felt like total quality. Greg Rucker on the title makes Superman and his world compulsively readable. There's a Jimmy Olsen section that's kind of interesting, but I couldn't care less. But I'm hearing Matt Fraction's doing incredible things with Jimmy Olsen, so he will check it out for the show. And he clearly wrote this little segment, and it was interesting. The Supergirl section is well-written, but only for the fans. As entertaining as this issue is, and it really is a good read, I'm still confused about Leviathan, but I do like the sense of real build-up across the titles. I gave it an 8 out of 10. It's a very good sort of read, and it really helps me understand what the life of Leviathan event is, which came from last week. And I sort of now piecing it together more. And I am interested. Now, I'm not the biggest Superman guy, and this feels like a very Superman-centric event, so I'm kind of coming in from the outside, but I'm still giving it an 8.8 out of 10. I mean, I think it's a very good read. Then we had Warlords of Mars Attacks. This is funny, because I didn't even realize that. I thought it was Warlord of Mars, which is, I want to say, an Edgar Rice Burroughs character from the... I don't know from when, like, God, probably from the 40s or 50s or something, but from a long time ago, maybe even the 30s, you know, John Carter, which they did it as well, and very poorly in a movie. But anyway, regardless, but it's that mixed with Mars Attacks, which from the 90s movie, Mars Attacks, which I love how Mars Attacks just keeps on coming back. 7 out of 10. The parts with John Carter were really good. Then they suddenly go into the modern world, and I really lost me. I felt there was way too much of the modern world in this comic. I didn't understand why we were doing that. I thought the whole point was to be on the John Carter one, but that didn't seem to be the case. 7 out of 10. The fun parts were the Mars parts. You know, John Carter fans, I think you'll probably enjoy it, but I don't know. Like, there was a lot of non-John Carter stuff in it. So, yeah, 7 out of 10. And then we had my comic of the week, probably, Justice League 26. Out of the computer, tapped me on this and was talking about it to me. And I said, I just kept saying to him, but man, it feels like Justice League is just one long fucking story about man who laughs. And he was like, Dave, I think you picked the wrong issue or two. Like, check it out. This was extremely interesting. They talk about the House of Heroes, all the multiverse characters. There were echoes of Morrison's Zenith from the 80s and 90s. All these characters kind of sliding in and out of time and space. This really appealed to me. And I said, and James Tynion IV, a guy I've got so much time for, is writing. And I said, how often is he writing the comic? And he's saying, Adam the Computer is saying that James Tynion IV and Snyder kind of swap in and out on this title. And I've got to be honest, I'm now starting to feel like I'm going to be picking up some old issues of Justice League to catch up on this run. Everyone knows I'm a huge Justice League fan, and I feel like I've been burnt in recent years, ever since Geoff Johns left. I love this title. I thought I gave it 8.5 out of 10. I thought it was my read of the week. I thought it was as strong as anything I've read in recent times to do with superheroes. And it ties into something that I'm really interested in, and I want to explore my own writing. I always thought in the 70s, I'm surprised I didn't do more kind of stuff with character work, like with them around, not always just fighting world-ending events, but sort of like, I don't know, just kind of talking and stuff amongst themselves and all that kind of thing. I think that would be interesting. I kind of take a sort of sophisticated clubhouse approach to it, sort of do some intrigues amongst the characters and stuff like that. I think that would be an interesting playground. And it felt like they were doing that here. So I felt like I was kind of getting my wish, like modern creators are sort of also feel the same way. So you can't say more. You give a comic 8.5 out of 10 and you say you're going to go and check out the arc before it. I think Adam the Computer was saying there's like a 6-issue arc, which is excellent. I'm going to check out those issues and I will probably include them in a one-shot review sometime this week. Okay, then we finally had Trade of the Week. Okay, now the trade of this week was Uncanny X-Force Volume 1, which is the first 4 issues of Uncanny X-Force. And I want to pay credit to, and I'm going to start doing this more and more, now that we're getting so big. No, but just now that I feel we're getting into the work a bit more, I want to give credit to the artists as well. And I always mean to, and the reason I don't normally is because I've got about 1,000 fucking screens open. But I can tell you on this one, Rick Remender's on writing duties. Jerome Opinia is on art. And the art is a huge piece of the puzzle of this comic. Now, I want to kind of set the scene for this. Now, Uncanny X-Force came out at a time when I was probably one of the world's biggest Deadpool fans. I would have been in the top 10 Deadpool fans in the world. I literally picked up every issue he did of everything. And I also am a huge Wolverine fan, et cetera, et cetera. I was heavily into comics at the time. It came out Rick Remender on writing duties. It had a lot of hype. I went and picked the first issue up. I was blown away. I went back to this volume and realized that I must have sped read it back in the day, because I just didn't remember hardly anything that happened in this other than that Apocalypse is a kid. That's literally the only thing I remembered. All this stuff about the Horsemen, this is so wild. This is such a good comic. It's so well written with such good art. Every character, I want to go through the characters that make up the Uncanny X-Force. You've got Wolverine, and he's very normal Wolverine. You've got Phantom X, I believe is how you say his name, who's a bizarre character who I don't quite understand because I haven't read the Grant Morrison issues, but he's kind of like a mercenary. He's not a million miles from like a Deadpool, but he's not as crazy. He has a mask on. I believe he might have been horribly mutilated, and he has kind of some sort of like relationship with his ship, like it's part of his consciousness or something, and he's a moral kind of thing. And then you have Angel, who I personally can't stand, but they make a lot of play out of how he turns into Archangel, and that's kind of deeply imprinted on him. And then you have Cyclock, who I also like, and she's like the telepath of the team, and you know, she's in a relationship with Angel at the start, and she can kind of dampen down his psychotic urges because of the Archangel inside of him that Apocalypse placed on him back in the 90s. And the goal of the X-Force is to do the jobs that the X-Men can't do, and that Scott Cyclops doesn't want to know about. And so Wolverine's kind of running this squad at the same time, I think, that he's doing Wolverine and the X-Men and running the school, I think. But anyway, like, all that sounds cool. Could be a, you know, cool comic. Like, I'd be interested. But combined with the art and the storytelling, this is actually a really high concept, very kind of moving and quite gripping tale that every character has a chance to shine inside four issues. And I very consciously want to only do one volume of it, because I want to sort of savor it a bit more, rather than you do 12 issues and sort of you only have 10 minutes of conversation. I wanted to kind of point out to people that, like, there's the very obvious part of the puzzle where Apocalypse is coming back as a kid, and their decision is whether to kill him or not. Okay, that's one part of it. But the other part is you really get insight into the actual Horsemen and how powerful they are and how overmatched the X-Force are. And just it's a wildly conceptual comic. Like, it's really interesting. And Phantom X plays a heavy role in this, in terms of his misdirection to get the job done. Wolverine plays a very typical Wolverine role, but even then you get to see the level of his healing facility and the gigantic weapons that the like Pestilence have and that kind of stuff in trying to stop Wolverine from killing them. And then you have like War, which is his big Minotaur, and they're the final Horsemen of Apocalypse. He starts picking these ones when everyone else has failed, I think. It's just so fascinating. Like, I really, four issues of a comic, I read it over 2 days, and I had forgotten how good it was. And I reckon I must have sped read it at the time, which I sometimes do, I just skim. Because I remember later arcs in this series more than I remember this one. And now I understand why people said it was such a masterpiece. I always thought it's a good comic, you know, 8 out of 10. This is really, really high quality stuff. I'm giving it a 9.5. I actually think it's almost as good as anything we've done on the show, including classics like Dark Knight Returns. I think Uncanny X-Force, just the first four issues, which is all I've read so far, again, in my reread. I have read the whole thing, and I picked it up in two big complete collections. Yeah, it stacks up against your Dark Knight Returns, your Greg Rucka's Wolverine run, Brubaker's Sleeper. Like, that's how highly I rate this. Above it, I would probably... Brubaker's Catwoman. It's almost... It's not quite personally at that level for me, but 9.5 out of 10. And I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed by the writing. It's clever and smart and funny and moves everything along nicely. And the art is just on point. The art gives this book, like, another 2 points. Honestly, it really does. Like, the art... This is a perfect marriage of art and story. artist strip, whatever you want to say, because the story is told through the art. Like, yeah, I would really hope that listeners realize that I'm being completely serious. I'm not joking. This is not a joke. This is not a drill. I seriously really, really enjoyed this one. And I think Rick Remender, this turned me on to Rick Remender. I knew who he was and had no feelings either way, but this swung me around to being a real Rick Remender fan. I followed his work, his independent work. For example, his Fear Agent, I've read a bit of, very good. He's got a lot of good stuff, actually, Rick Remender. Very good artist. He's a very good event called Axis at Marvel that I really personally enjoyed. But this is quality stuff. This is as good as it gets in terms of his work for hire work. I give it a 9.5 out of 10. I'm pretty sure Stu enjoys it too. I don't want to speak for him, but I believe that he himself also likes his title. And I, out of the computer, reckons it's his favorite Marvel work of all time, which is a huge fucking call. I'd put it up there with, like, Wolverine, some Wolverine stuff that I consider some of the best, like Enemy of the State, Rucker's Wolverine, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, the real classic kind of Marvel. It's a modern classic. Now, interestingly, so we've already sort of covered that I'll be doing some one-shot shows, and I'll let them be sort of more guerrilla approach. They'll just pop up on your feed during the week. I'll probably do one at some point during the week, because Dion and I are going to record a little bit later than a Friday night. So the book we're doing, Dion and myself, we're going to be doing is American Vampire by Scott Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque, Volume 1 in the hardcover. It covers it's right on 200 pages, and it covers about 5 issues. We're going to be doing that on the next proper show. I'm probably going to try to read... I've got a few things I'm thinking about. And we're also going to be doing, because Dion's a huge fan of Joker, and I thought it'd be really interesting to do a Joker. So we're doing a Chuck Dixon Joker book as well called Devil's Advocate. So we're doing Devil's Advocate and American Vampire next show. So there's a fair bit of reading there, probably about 350 pages in total, and that show will drop. I will put up a little guerrilla show beforehand. I'm thinking about things like Wolverine's Rucker, The Boys by Garth Ennis, or maybe Hitman by Garth Ennis. Got a few things I'm kicking around, but I'll see how the moods take me during the week. Thank you for listening to me. I hope it's been long enough. I try to give you, when I'm doing a solo show, I try to give you quality. Quantity is hard because you can talk to yourself for like half an hour, but that gets boring, you know. I like to keep it pacey. I like to keep it punchy. I hope you've enjoyed what I've had to say, and I hope you enjoyed the music. Look, follow the collective. You've got Inner Demons, you've got Into the Night, Ray, the Inner Demons guys are geniuses as well. You've got I Am Your Target Demographic, I checked that out. Atlantean Rising, I mean, wow, I'm dropping fucking bombs. So after you listen to your signal, check out those guys, because we are a fucking team that's taking us all the way to the title. I can feel it, I can taste it. Look, follow us on our Facebook page, Signal of Doom Facebook. I'm at Red Lantern 2051. There is also my book at the moment, Demon Soulfighter. Check that out on Amazon. You can pick yourself a copy, either print or Kindle. Other than that, keep it safe. Keep punching. Keep killing if you have to. Just keep moving. Keep fucking fluid. And I will catch you next show. Good night. Shuffling their feet. People sleep.